Welcome to The Progressive Corporation's Investor Relations Conference Call. This conference call is also available by an audio webcast. Webcast participants will be able to listen only throughout the duration of the call. In addition, this conference is being recorded at the request of Progressive. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. The company will not make detailed comments in addition to those provided in its annual report on Form 10-K and the letter to shareholders, which have been posted to the company's website, and will use this conference call to respond to questions. Acting as moderator for the call will be Julia Hornack. At this time, I will turn the call over to Ms. Hornack.
Thank you, Marcia. Good morning. Welcome to Progressive's conference call. Participating on today's call are Tricia Griffith, our CEO, John Sauerland, our CFO, and Bill Cody, our Chief Investment Officer. The call is scheduled to last about an hour. As always, our discussions on this call may include forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are based on management's current expectations and are subject to many risks and uncertainties that could cause actual events and results to differ materially from those discussed during this call. Additional information concerning those risks and uncertainties is available in our 2016 annual report on Form 10-K, where you will find discussions of the risk factors affecting our businesses, safe harbor statements related to forward-looking statements, and other discussions of the risks, uncertainties, and other challenges we face. These documents can be found via the investors page of our website, progressive.com. Marcia, we are now ready to take our first question.
At this time, we are ready to begin the formal question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your touchtone phone. You may press star 2 to withdraw your question. After pressing star 1 to ask a question, you will be prompted to state your name and company to help with pronunciation. Please be advised that during this process, you will be momentarily blocked from hearing the live call. To allow the company to respond to as many callers as possible, you will be limited to one initial question and one follow-up question per request. If your telephone has a mute capability, we ask that you use this function during the time your question is being answered to minimize any background noise. To the extent you have additional questions, you will need to place your name back in the queue by selecting star 1 on your telephone. The first question will be coming from Kay Pan from Morgan Stanley. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good morning. First question for Tricia. We have seen rising loss costs across the auto industry, and competitors are raising price some aggressively, which creates some market opportunity. At the same time, you are close to your 96% target and pull back on advertising in the second half. Would you continue to pull back on marketing to improve your margin, or would you seize the new sort of this market dislocation to grow your business, even at the risk of running, breaching the 96% target?
Thanks, Kai. Yeah, we did that last year. As you know, we have a very clear objective to grow as fast as we can and make at least 4 cents of underwriting profit. And we got close to that last year towards the latter half. As you know, about 2.5 points of that were catastrophes, and so we pulled back a little bit. We are fully back into our advertising mode, and we're obviously seeing some of our competitors, and they've acknowledged that they need a lot of rate in the system. We added about 5.5 points last year. We feel very good about our rate adequacy. We feel great about being able to turn on our advertising. And, you know, we really owe it to our owners to consistently talk about our objective of growing as fast as we can at a 96 combined ratio. So we don't take that lightly. Our decision to pull back, we knew would have some short-term opportunities lost, but we were prepared for that because of how important it is for our owners to know that we'll do whatever we can to make sure we reach our objectives. So, I mean, this year so far, as you saw January results, we feel great where we're at. Our future trend looks to be about 4%. Obviously, we have to react if that changes, but we feel like we made the appropriate decision to pull back, and we're excited to be back in with full advertising.
Thank you. And separately, we have seen traffic fatality has risen about 40,000 last year, and the car manufacturer actually adopting the sort of like advanced technology, some ADAS system. Do you actively giving discount to cars with ADAS? And how do you think the tech adoption in cars could impact both the frequency and the severity in both near term as well as over the long run?
We have seen obviously a lot in the news regarding fatalities and a lot regarding autonomous vehicles and reasoning for that. You know, we clearly have a lot of data based on our snapshot model. We have almost 19 billion miles and over 2 million usage-based PIFs. So we look at that closely, and we have seen that mileage has gone up per participant. In fact, in the last 26 months has gone up, mostly based on longer trips. So we're looking at that, and we're also looking at, from an R&D perspective, to be able to look at those emerging technologies, and if we feel like they correlate to less losses, putting that into our product both now and future. So, yeah, that's a big part of our R&D. We really do, though, believe the future, when we think about the future, we want to have data that correlates to all the things you hear and read about, and have a basis on what that means as far as loss trends.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all the answers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kai. Marcia will now take the next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Elyse Greenspan from Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Good morning. My first question is on the prospect for corporate tax reform in the U.S. As you guys think about lower taxes, do you think that would fall to the bottom line, or would you potentially be forced by regulators to push that through to your insureds? And if you were, I guess, forced to push through the lower tax rates, I mean, how do you see this playing out over what kind of time frame in terms of the prices you're able to charge?
I'll take that one. This is John Sauerland. We don't have a consensus view on tax reform, and certainly we're not in a position to say what we would do specifically, as there's no specific changes to react to at this juncture. So generally speaking, however, I would say our inclination would be to allow any tax benefits, presuming there would be any, to fall to the bottom line. So we continue to focus on the 96, as Tricia just mentioned. I would expect we would continue to do that. You mentioned regulators choosing to force that change through to consumers. We have not seen that previously. States charge premium taxes, which are a little less transparent to you all, in that they show up actually in our acquisition costs. So we pay between $350 and $400 million annually in state premium tax, in lieu, generally speaking, of state income taxes. And that's generally where the regulators, who are state-based, would focus in terms of allowing taxes to flow through or not to our premiums. So we don't have a consensus view. Were there to be a change, generally speaking, I think it's fair to say we would allow that to fall to the bottom line.
Yep, great.
Okay, thank you. And my second question, as we think about 2016, can you point to, or, just kind of talk to the loss picks that you used, and if maybe there was, some element of conservatism that you guys have built in, I guess, just as we think about some of, the missteps and some of your competitors that obviously, had missed some of, the rising trends, especially on the severity side, if you can just kind of, talk us through how you set your picks for, 2016.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously, using the term setting a pick is broad because we have our objective, but we look at every product, new and renewal, and we look at loss trends based on, the past and what we're seeing pretty early on with our usage-based information. And we set them accordingly to make sure that we may, meet or beat our targets. And those targets are very different per state, new and renewal, product, customer. And so to say one pick, it's kind of simplifies it. We really dig deep into segmentation and then ultimately build that into our product model.
To that, I would add, as Tricia noted, we did take 5.5% rate increases in our auto programs last year, which is above what we normally do in a year. Additionally, we added over 9 points of rate to our commercial lines products. So we have been reacting to trends fairly aggressively, and I think that's why you've seen our combined ratios where they're at.
Yeah, you know, one more thing on that. I think John brings up the commercial product. We made early and decisive decisions on that and dug in, even though in June and July when we first saw frequency increase a little bit, we thought that could have been a seasonality issue. But we dug into it and we were able to react starting in August to get that 9%. So I think part of it is, you know, things do pop up, I think, on any insurance company, unknown. But when you do, it's how you react. And our ability to react swiftly has always been one of our strengths.
We've also reacted with underwriting changes. So especially in our commercial vehicle, when we see segments for which we are not adequately priced, we can restrict them very rapidly. And we are also doing that now in our personal lines programs. Pretty robustly, we have a number of levers we can pull to either take a second look at business before we commit to it or completely reject business if we are pretty confident that that business is going to run above our targets.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Elise. Marcia, please, the next caller.
The next question comes from the line of Josh Shanker. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. So following up on Elise's question, if I turn on the TV right now, someone's going to tell me to give them 15 minutes and save me 500 more or 15% more on auto insurance. Following up on Elise's question on tax, what have you learned about the competitive environment in this industry? And if a bunch of profitable auto insurers do get a tax break, how is that going to affect advertising and the behaviors of the industry?
I'll start with that. I'll have John talk a little bit more about tax. I mean, I think John was clear on any tax reduction we believe would benefit us, and we would want that to go to the bottom line through lower prices for our customers, and then everyone wins. For us, the advertising is really about what you think you can get, you know, harvest in terms of new business. And you can listen to five different commercials, and everyone's going to save you $500, and all of them are incorrect at some point. But you know, we believe advertising is important to be able to be top of mind, be short on the list in terms of when you make that call, when you get possibly rate shock, as more and more customers are likely to take greater rates at a higher pace. So to me, those are a little bit separate from the tax issue, which will be, you know, an answer that we get sometime in the future. For us, it's really about how much we want to advertise at the right cost, so at our targeted acquisition cost to get the right customers in the door that we want.
And I'll just add to that. So the taxes that we include in our pricing indications are the premium taxes, the state-level taxes. The federal taxes, we have been on the high side, frankly, in terms of what we pay. You can think of our effective tax rate over time as closer to 32-33%. We have taken some actions more recently to be proactive in managing that. I would say we think that our premium tax management is some of the best in the industry. And again, that's, you know, 1.5 to 2 points that is in our pricing indications, is in the expense ratio we report every month. But we haven't been extremely proactive with our federal tax rate. We're starting to take actions to do so. We did two investment tax credit deals last year that moved our effective rate down about 4 points. That doesn't all fall to the bottom line, but we do get some benefits from that, and I would expect us to continue to do so. But our 96, if you've followed us for a while, and as Tricia just said, is sort of chiseled in stone for us, and I don't expect we'll change that.
Okay, and there's just one more in. The publicly available information isn't great, but I have a sense about where you've been raising prices on publicly available information. And it seems like in your disclosure in the SEC financials, it seems to be that the premium per policy is up in excess of the rate filings that I'm looking at. I know a lot of competitors say there's leakage sometimes, that if we file, sometimes customers buy down and therefore we don't get the complete benefit of a rate increase, but I've never seen a excessive rate increase come through. I'm trying to understand the mechanism that might be causing that to happen.
Sure, that's a great question. And you, if you take rates up or you take rates down, you won't see exactly in the reported average premium what was filed in the rate change. A lot of stuff is going on countrywide. So we have a lot of products. We have a lot of states that have higher and lower average premiums. We grow more or less in certain segments because of our product changes. So our product changes are not just base rate increases, if you will. They're more frequently targeted at segments in which we think we can lower rates and get more competitive and still hit our 96, or if we need to, raise rates to hit our 96. So you see what we think of as mixed shifts in book across a product, across states, and so the reported average premium change will never match the reported rate change filed with the departments. And you're correct. Our average premiums have been going up at a solid clip, and actually in the auto programs closer to what we have filed. In the commercial programs, we have had very large mixed shifts to higher average premium segments over time. So if you look back, especially over the past 2 years, you'll see average premium changes going up a lot in commercial lines when we weren't even raising rates. More recently, we are raising rates, but you wouldn't even see that yet in the average premiums, because that takes a while to flow through the book. As we generally have reported, our auto programs are on six-month policies generally, and our commercial lines are on the annual. So, yes, we've enjoyed average premium gains, which is fantastic. They won't necessarily match the filed rate changes.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh. Marshall, we'll take the next caller, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Ryan Tunis from Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Crystal Alou in for Ryan. My question is on the new property reinsurance cover. Can you walk us through your thinking behind the change from the aggregate severe storm cover to the new stop-loss reinsurance agreement that caps the losses, excluding the named storms, at a 63 loss ratio? And can you also give some color around the cost of this type of reinsurance and the amount of premium that's tied to it?
Yeah, I'm going to have Trevor, the CFO from ASI, take that one.
Good morning. The stop loss, to do that, it was a simple consideration of getting additional coverage for a reasonable cost. While the aggregate stop loss does exclude named storms and liability, it includes other perils such as winter storm, wildfire, and earthquake. The previous aggregate was limited to just severe thunderstorms. For the costs, it's difficult to say what our total reinsurance costs will be since a large portion of our program is placed in June, but we believe the reinsurance market remains soft, and as we expand our footprint to states that are not coastal, we're hopeful that our direct premiums will increase at a faster rate than our ceded premiums.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Crystal. Marsha, we'll take the next caller, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Bob Glasspiegel from Janney Montgomery. Your line is open.
Good morning, Progressive, and I'm going to follow up on that question with property. Tricia, now that we've had a decent bit of time post the acquisition, how would you assess where you are both with respect to growth and profitability in the property book?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. We feel good about where we're at. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the Platinum program, which was, the big reason that we started this acquisition or began our partnership with ASI to have access to an addressable market we didn't have, especially on the agency side. So we feel good about growth. We feel good about the targets that we've set. Obviously, last year was more volatile on the property side from the cat perspective, and that's one of the reasons why we're always looking at reinsurance and how that'll work, especially as we expand in more and more states with ASI. So as of last year, we were in 39. I think we added a state in the last couple of months, but we continue to feel really good. And obviously, as we look at each state and at both products, we talked about this a little bit in October. We look at, are we competitive on the preferred auto? Are we competitive on the home? Are we competitive in both? And so when we say no to any of those, we do a deep dive with our R&D department and ASIs to understand how can we make sure we have broad enough coverage to reach our goals, again, the 96, and the property is a component of that, and to grow as much of that preferred business as we can. And so we're doing that, obviously, through our platinum agents. We have specific sales reps that call on those agents to make sure they reach the goals we set for them, and we'll double the amount of those agents in 2017. Clearly, you know, we obviously would love to grow more and more Robinsons. We're proud of the fact that we were able to grow our PIF base over 50% last year, but again, it's on a small base, so I don't want to say that we there's a lot of runway on there, Bob. And we know, I think one of the things we learned from this is that changing agents' behavior is slower than we thought, but we are bullish on where we're going with that product, with the growth, and with the profitability in all of our products.
Thank you. Follow-up is on commercial auto. I think you came in around a 93 last year, and your full last 2 months have been, you know, very good profitability month. Are we now in a position to grow, or do you need more data to make sure that you got your arms around the fix, which just started in August, as you said? Are we positioned to grow in that business this year? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. We feel, obviously, we're in a much better position. We think of Q3 last year coming in around a 99, and then Q4 coming in around a 91. We knew we were on the right trajectory, but John, like John said, we had the 9% rate. Takes a little bit longer to earn in based on annual policies, and we had a fair amount of underwriting restrictions on new business in those high-frequency segments. What we're doing as we have more and more knowledge, and over the next couple of months, we'll determine if we can remove some of those restrictions, and that'll be first and foremost what we will look at in terms of to spur on new growth. In addition, frequency is still a little bit elevated. We think some of that's seasonality, and some of it's just based on miles driven and other frequency triggers. So we're going to keep our eye on it closely, but we will be assessing each month whether we should remove some or all of those underwriting restrictions for new business that we put into place.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Marcia, please, the next caller.
Thank you. The next question comes from Meyer Shields from KBW. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning. Tricia, you talked about the PIF growth in the Robinson segment, and I'm wondering if you can just clarify, when you price that business, are you pricing for a 96 during the initial calendar year, or is it a 96 over the lifetime of individual policies?
We price different segments. We don't talk publicly about how we price each segment, but we obviously on an aggregate calendar year, we want to get to a 96, and on a cohort pricing for lifetime 96. So we look at both of those and determine, you know, on incoming business exactly how we can do that. And obviously it's different in new and renewal and different in the channels.
Okay, understood. Separate question, there's obviously tremendous uncertainty about the Affordable Care Act and what may or may not replace it. Can you talk about how you incorporate that in some of your medium-tailed, I'm thinking like BI lines?
Well, we like certainty when we think of trends. Obviously, we watch those, and we have an area of our company in the R&D section that thinks about trends and thinks about runway, and we model out different things that can change and affect medical costs as well as other costs, whether it's sheet metal costs. And so we look at those, but we really can't react until we have data that we see or are reasonably certain of. So those things are so up in the air. We really are listening, reading, modeling out, but we'll react when we are able to see data come through the system or when we have reasonable knowledge of what we believe will happen.
Okay, and by data, do you mean actual losses or output from the R&D department?
Losses.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Mayor. Marcia, please, the next caller.
The next question comes from Ian Gutterman from Balyasny. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I guess I wanted to start on the PIF growth side. I noticed something interesting, I guess, looking forward here. We're about to hit a point where it looks like you're going to cross over where agency PIF will be growing the same or even faster than direct PIF as direct starts to slow and agency keeps accelerating. And that's a pretty rare occurrence, at least in all the history I see in from the company. Just curious your observations on that. Is that something you guys are expecting? And you know, going forward, do you think agency can keep up with direct, or are we just sort of in the sweet spot for agency and directs, you know, is, you know, as you said, slow down advertising and such that we shouldn't expect that to continue? I'm just kind of curious how you're looking at it, at the two channels.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we want to grow as much as we can in both channels, and that's the formula we want. We've been proud of the agency growth that was long awaited, and we don't want that to stop. Clearly, when you pull up back on advertising, it's going to have a much bigger impact on the direct side. So, you know, that will start to come as the year progresses because we're fully back into our advertising that we've budgeted for. So, you know, to say we want to plan to grow one more than the other, we want to grow both substantially. That's one of the reasons why we have the acquisition of ASI, because we really saw that addressable market, mostly on the agency side, to be able to have this customer, the Robinson, the auto and home bundle, and have access to that. So we think there's a lot of room to grow on the agency channel, and clearly we want to be available when, where, and how customers want to buy. So if it's on the agency channel, direct, through mobile, however that is, we are going to, you know, try to fully throttle on every channel and every way we can get good and profitable business.
Got it. That's helpful. Thank you. And then just to follow up on Josh's earlier question about, you know, premium growth versus PIF, and, you know, we talked about some of the mixed impacts from, you know, what states you're growing in and such, but I assume part of it is also, you know, as you're bundling more, as you're, you know, getting more, you know, higher end customers who just, you know, buy more insurance and things like that. Is there a way to help us? I think I've asked this in the past, but maybe just for an update on it, just to help us understand a little bit better inside that mix shift and, you know, A, how to think about what is sort of a normal level of positive, you know, mix is on top of PIF and average premium. And then, you know, is there anything, I assume the losses, for the most part, maybe there's obviously some buckets are a little bit better than others, but I assume the losses are largely going to be variable with the growth. But, you know, does expense leverage come at all from shifting the mix, or is expense leverage really more about unit growth?
I may not hit all of these, so ask if I don't, and John,
sure.
Wayne, if I didn't. So we're going to look at, obviously, you know, PIF growth is the relationship of new and renewal. So the new business comes in through more advertising, having a competitive product on the market, and the retention is something I talked about in our letter regarding just being able to have the right rate, have the right rate at the right time, and also nurture our customers. So when we look at growth, we really do try to focus on unit growth. And, you know, the premium comes with a lot of different mixes. So it could be state mix. They vary greatly in state. Obviously, full coverage, which more of the Robinsons will have full coverage, so that affects premium. So those shifts, I think, come as our shifts in having more Robinsons come, but also just the trends that we're seeing from loss costs. So there's a lot of inputs. We focus on unit growth, and, you know, obviously retention is a big piece that we've been increasingly not just paying more attention to, but really having a lot of focus on. So expenses, that was the last thing I think you talked about, that matters a lot. You know, we see the companies that grow and grow profitably care a lot about costs. We always do. We continue to do that only because if you can be more efficient and do more today than you did yesterday with the same amount of people, we're able to bake that into our prices and we're more competitive. So that's how we grow. But, you know, unit growth continues to be our mantra, and with all those caveats I just said.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that is in terms of expense management, we focus a lot on what we call our non-acquisition expense ratio. If you look at that 20 expense ratio, you can think about half of it is what we call acquisition expenses. Those are either commission or media spend dollars. And as we desire to continue to grow, those costs are likely to continue to rise. Commission, obviously, along with premium advertising costs, we want to be as efficient as possible, but more spend that we can deploy to our advertising at our targets, we certainly want to do as much of that as we can. But on the non-acquisition expense side, we think of those as sort of structural costs that we want to work to continue to reduce. If you look over the past maybe 7-8 years, we've probably taken 2 points out of our non-acquisition expense ratio. We'd like to take more out of that, and that comes from process improvements, getting more efficient, moving customers more towards self-service. But it is largely driven by people. So as Tricia said, we want to do more if we can with the same amount of people. At the same time, more recently, we've been adding a ton of employees. We want to make sure we are adequately staffed as we grow. It's important when you're adding a lot of people to ensure that you're not understaffed, as we have a lot of employees now with tenure with the company, you know, less than a year, and that are handling claims. So you want to make sure you're adequately staffed when you're growing a lot. So that's kind of the place we're in right now. But our long-term objective is to continue to reduce our non-acquisition expense ratio.
Okay, that's why I focused on that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and on the LAE side as well. So our whole team is focused on what we can do in the next several years, really chipping away at that. And but like John said, you have to invest in both people and technology. And you read that hopefully in the K, how we've invested a lot in quoting systems and other systems. For us, it's really about investing for the future in order to be more efficient. But we don't want to shortcut that. When I talk about 96, grow as fast as you can, the only caveat to that is if we're able to service our customers in the way that we know we need to, both on the claims side and the CRM side.
Absolutely, and that's why, John, I was focusing on that non-acquisition expense, thinking about sort of the two things you brought up and trying to think what the trade-offs are, meaning, one is just, if a Sam, I guess, generates $800 of premium as an example, and a Robinson, across 2.5 cars, let's say, is $3,000, is there more leverage? But then again, does it cost more to serve them because you have to invest for the growth? That's why I was trying to figure out that trade-off.
Yeah, we look at all of that, and what we've made very clear is that we love Sam as long as we can make our target margin on Sam, but we also look at that from a CRM side to determine if someone's calling in a lot, are there ways that we can get information out proactively to the people that need those? So we have, we talked about that a little bit in the October meeting, just all of the data around inspection and needs and understanding proactively what each customer needs. And, if Sam's calling in all the time for the same question, how can we do that more efficiently and not having necessarily maybe even a human answer the phone? Maybe we're able to get that information out as they chat with us. So we look at that across all the segments to try to determine the needs for each customer.
And to tack that on to a previous question, we are, I think, pretty good at looking at the customer segment level and pricing to that lifetime 96 that Tricia mentioned. Obviously, we're also charged with the calendar for the organization at a 96. But we think through those average premiums you just mentioned for the Sams and the Robinsons, but also the lifetime total premium, and those Robinsons are going to stay with us a lot longer. And we build into both our acquisition pricing as well as our servicing pricing, those attributes. So to the extent a customer segment costs us more for serving or servicing or costs us less, we have a component of our pricing that is intended to reflect that.
Makes perfect sense. Thanks for the time, guys.
Thanks. Thanks, Ian. Marcia, we'll take the next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Paul Newsom from Sandler O'Neill Partners. Your line is open.
Good morning, and thanks for the call. I was hoping you could help me kind of with a little bit of a modeling question. I'm often looking at the relationship between written premium and earned premium. Progressive tends to be a little bit more challenging in that relationship. I suspect, and here's the question, that has to do with a changing amount of, you know, 1 month, 6 month in your policies in your book. So I guess my question is that true? And if it's true, could you talk about how the mix of business has changed over the last year or so or two between policies of different types of duration in your auto book?
Sure. We only write six-month or 12-month policies. Commercial lines is predominantly 12-month. Our special lines programs are also predominantly 12-month policies. Our auto programs are still by far and away 6-month policies. However, we have opened up annual policies for auto for the Platinum agents. So that segment is growing, as we've noted. That's our intent, and along with it, annual policies, but we're talking about very low single-digit percentages of our total auto policies written right now are annual. But if you have a model that is looking back and it's not matching what's happening more recently, yes, a small percentage of new business policies are now being written in annual, in auto, in our Platinum agencies.
Maybe this aged me a little bit, but wasn't there once a time when the Progressive was, you know, very much a non-standard auto writer and wrote the one-month policies, or am I just remembering that incorrectly?
If we did write one-month policies, it's been quite some time. It's not to my recollection.
Yeah, I don't recall that at all. We've tested the auto 12-month, and that's why we're dipping our toe in for that preferred customer in the Platinum program only for your policy to be able to match their home policy, but I'm not familiar with the 1 month.
Yeah, so we'll take 1 month of premium down, but we could do that on a 6 month policy or an annual policy, and the books would show the written premium for the respective policy period.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Marshall, we'll take the next caller, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Adam Klauber from William Blair. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning. It sounds like bundling is going well. I think you mentioned you're going to grow Platinum agents a lot this year. Can you give us an idea of how much Platinum agents grew from the last year to this year?
Yeah, I think we wrote that. I think they, at least how much? Double?
We shared in Tricia's letter that the Robinson segment within the Platinum agencies grew over 50%. So that's not the total premium for the Platinum agencies. But those agents are certainly focused on that segment. So while we are not reporting the total growth for Platinum agencies, I think that can be looked at as reflective of, generally speaking, the agent's growth, that segment.
But were you asking agents in particular that actually are able to write the Platinum?
Yes.
Yeah, they grew, I think they at least doubled, maybe more last year, and will double again in 2017. And we're pretty open on actually the number of those within our Qs and our K.
Okay.
So that's in terms of agency plants.
Yeah, agency number of agencies that write it. I'll find it.
Okay. And then as far as pricing efficiency and bundling, you've just been bundling for, a few years now. Where would you say you're on that curve? Are you in the third inning, fifth inning? Are you getting better by leaps and bounds? Could you just give us some idea of that improvement curve?
Yeah, I think we are on first, and we have a lot to go because we knew we, on two sides with bundling, I've talked a little bit about changing agent behavior, integrating with ASI's sales team, making sure we expand the property product from ASI across the country. So that's really been our focus on the agency side. So we feel like we are rounding first at a fast pace, but have a lot to do and a lot of runway to go. On the direct side, we've been working on that a lot longer, and we have we have ASI and some other unaffiliated partners. I feel like we're really ramping up speed on the direct side. So I talked years ago about our in-house agency that we call Progressive Advantage Agency, and it has grown substantially over the past several years. We started out, you know, 2 or 3 years ago with 25 people. We're upwards of several hundred now that are able to write home, auto, and other products. And there's these are Progressive agents on the direct side. And we feel really proud about the momentum we have there. And actually, they've grown in sales over 100% this year. So a little bit different story on both, but both good stories, and both have a lot of momentum.
Great. And then could you give us some idea of weather impact? I mean, it's been a very, very easy winter for most of the country. Is that helping auto losses in January, February? And then also San Jose, there was flooding. Is that going to be a similar event to what we saw in maybe Houston or Baton Rouge last year?
We feel, you know, great about our January results. Our February will wrap up this week, so you'll know soon what those results are. But we feel, obviously, you know, we're in Cleveland and we look out and there's not much snow, so we feel pretty positive. I don't have a lot of data on San Jose, but I don't believe it'll be similar to what we saw last year.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, Marcia, we'll take the next caller, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Brian Meredith from UBS. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning. A couple questions here for you, Trish. The first, I'm just curious, you have been extending duration on your fixed income portfolio. How much more room do you have to extend duration? Should we expect that to continue to rise here? And I guess, does that imply that you think that, you know, interest rates are popping out here?
I'll go ahead and let Bill take that when he's on the phone.
Hi, sure. Yeah, I don't think interest rates are topping out here, but what we've said all along is that as rates rise, we'll gradually extend our duration as the break-evens get a little bit better and we're getting paid a little bit more to take some rate risk. So as I would say, as rates rise going forward and we expect them to continue to rise, we also expect to increase our duration a little bit. Now, our range and duration, our guidelines, is 1.5 years to 5 years. I don't see us getting to 5 years anytime soon, but we at 2.2 years, we have considerable room to extend our duration as we see rates go higher.
Great, thanks. And then the next question, Trish, if I take a look at your agency business and I look at the combined ratios, you know, for 16 versus 15 and you know, the increase we have. Now, I understand part of that is weather-related and catastrophe losses, but how much of it do you think is because of the growth in new business, just kind of the new business penalty versus, you know, as you're thinking about, you know, the bundled product and more retentions, should we expect that combined ratio to kind of keep closer to 96 going forward just because of the lifetime value of the customer?
That's a good question. Some of it's obviously the new business penalty we talked about in October, both on the commission side and oftentimes new business. You know, we don't know the customers well, and losses will be a little bit higher. We, as you know, we don't talk about our particular goals for combined ratio on each of our segments or anything under the aggregate of 96. But, yeah, you should expect as a company that we will try to be at or below a 96 with all of our products combined. But we feel very positive about where we're at with agency, and we feel positive about, more importantly, having an ever-evolving preferred product model for them to be able to sell, to give agents what they needed to get us that customer that we had not had in the past. And we believe the, you know, lifetime value of customers that have more products and are more preferred and stay with us because our rates are competitive, you know, ends up having more value to Progressive.
Absolutely. And then I know you don't talk about per product, you know, the combined ratio targets, but as I think about it, if you're selling a bundled package policy, I would think that your, you know, homeowners targets have got to be well below a 96 given the volatility. I mean, do you think of it that way? And when you think about a particular, you know, customer, are you saying, all right, we're targeting this customer at a 96, so maybe higher auto, lower homeowners?
We absolutely differentiate on what we think the customer, each customer, the value it could bring. So looking at a bundled customer, we would look at differently than a monoline home or a monoline auto, but always getting to that 96 or lower.
Thank you.
Thank you. Marcia, we'll take the next question, please.
Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your touchtone phone. The next question comes from the line of Barry White from USAA Asset Management. Your line is open.
Thank you. You guys have some hybrid securities coming due, or I'm sorry, coming up for call in June. I was just wondering if you have decided on what you're planning to do with those, if they're going to extend or stay put, and either way, I guess if you're not going to do that, what your considerations are for evaluating a decision like this.
We have not decided, and Bill, do you want to give any more color on that?
Sure. We haven't decided. I'll also ask John to chime in on this question as well. It's a combination of spreads and rates. The hybrid security floats at 201.75 basis points over 3-month LIBOR come June, that's a relatively wide spread for us and rates, and it would float fortunately for us at a low rate at the moment. So that's what we're deliberating about. John, do you have more to add?
I really don't. We are charged with letting our owners, if we choose to redeem in June, know by mid-May, and we'll have to do that, but we have made no decision as of this point.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Barry. Marshall, we'll take the next caller, please.
The next question comes from the line of Kai Pan from Morgan Stanley. Your line is open.
Thank you for the follow-up. Just a follow-up on Brian's question on investment portfolio. Bill, so what percentage of your fixed income portfolio mature each year, and what's the new money yield versus the maturing yields? And just wanted to understand the impact from rising interest rates.
That's a good question. There is a significant part of our fixed income portfolio that matures on an annual basis, and we disclose that in the annual report. And I'll describe our new money yield. I'll first define our new money yield as cash from operations, principal and interest pay downs, as well as redeployment of the existing portfolio cash, whether it's cash that we raise from selling some bonds and also redeploying from our short-term portfolio to a more fixed maturity portfolio. So in the fourth quarter, our new money yield was relatively low, below our book yield, and actually just a little below 2%. However, a big part of that, over $2 billion, was redeploying cash from our short-term portfolio to largely our treasury portfolio as we extend the duration. So it was higher yielding than the cash we had held, but treasuries are still lower yielding than our average book yield in the portfolio.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, when I was looking through some of the documents, we talked about tripling the number of agents, so you'll read that in the letter, and then our plan is to more than double that. So that's where we're at with Platinum agents, to continue to make sure we have enough agents across the country as we continue to expand our coverage.
So that was in response to Adam's question.
Yeah, that was Adam's question a little earlier.
Yep. It looks like we have no other callers at this time, so that concludes our call today. Marcia, I will turn it back over to you for the closing scripts, please.
That concludes the Progressive Corporation's Investor Relations Conference call. An instant replay of the call will be available through Friday, March 17, by calling 1-800-285-0609. Or it can be accessed via the Investor Relations section of Progressive's website for the next year.